Welcome to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. I'm your host, Earl Carruthers, and I have been a serial cannapreneur in the growing, processing, and retail space for over 8 years. And we are here to learn together to get a well-balanced understanding of cannabis and cannabis products. Tune in every week for quality cannabis education for your canna inspiration. Three, two, one. Give me the thumbs up. We are live. We are live. What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up, y'all? All right. The streaming guys are working. We are live. Hello, 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 and welcome to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast show. We have a great show for you today. This is a live show. So if you're out there in the comments, definitely this is interactive. You can ask questions. Today, we're going to be talking about what's up with marijuana stocks and everything you need to know. And we have a very, very, very special guest that's going to bring us into that. But yes, as you guys are still coming in, this is live interactive. Give me a what up, though. Hello, hello, hello. And what up, though? Welcome to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast show. This show is to help you avoid bad and uncomfortable cannabis experiences so that we could enjoy cannabis more comfortably. And then also restore cannabis as therapy once again. So, yes, I see you out there. Hello, hello, hello. We have a great show. With the show, we have different series, as you know. If you're new to the show, we got a cannabis therapy series where we get into like the science of cannabis. We have a cannabis history series where we get to the history of cannabis. We got the do-it-yourself series where we teach you how to do things yourself, such as making cannabis butter. We have the home grow series of the Cannabis Therapy Podcast where we teach you how to grow amazing bud at home. And this is the Cannabis Biz Connect series, where it's for those who are looking to get into the industry or those who are in the industry looking to kind of fine tune their skills on being cannabis entrepreneur. So, yes, hello to you out there as well. Let me know where you're watching this from. Are you from work? You at home? I know we're in the middle of the day. Are you in the garden? Let me know. Let me know. And also, if you give access to StreamYard, you give access to your Facebook. We get to know who you are. Right now, it just says Facebook user, but we're going to get into the show. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking about marijuana guests. Yes, we got YouTube out there. What's up, though? What's up, Cynthia? Much love. I appreciate that. Appreciate that. Long time friend there. That's love. That's love. That's love. All right. So let me introduce our guest. We have Matthew Norgren, who has been involved in over $7 billion in transactions. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of zeros. $7 billion in transactions and maintains a portfolio of approximately 30 plus companies. That's a lot of people. There's a lot of money and a lot of people. One of his big accomplishments, he's ranked number 3 globally by Business Insider in terms of investment companies focused on the emerging cannabis and hemp sectors. And something that's very impressive is that he's named top 100 most influential people in the cannabis industry by High Times magazine. And something else I would think even more impressive, him and I are truly we're brothers. We're brothers from another father, a heavenly father. So that's even more impressive, I would say, right there. Without any further ado, let me bring on Matthew. And that rhyme, too. I like that. Let me get him onto the screen here. Technology. Technology. Bam! Matt, can you hear me?
Hey, good to be with you. I can hear you.
Awesome. 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 Welcome, fam. Thank you for joining the Cannabis Therapy Podcast show.
Well, glad to be here. We poured our life into this. And as you mentioned, there's a number of reasons as to why you and I connect personally. And then in this industry, it's a community. We're all brothers and sisters when you think about it. And when you think even deeper about it, the polarity of masculinity and femininity, we all have. We all have. And as a spirit, there is no such thing as man and woman in my mind, just a physical form. So, you know, we're all the same, we're all connected, and this industry really helps community in a way that I haven't ever seen in any other industry.
And I appreciate your giving back to the community as well. You do a lot to give back, and that's recognized, and not a lot of people have to do that, or actually they should do it, but you're kind of doing it from the kindness of your own heart. I could feel it coming from your heart, so I appreciate that, fam. All right, cool. So with this conversation, Matt, I kind of want to get into the history of marijuana stocks and public trading from your point of view. I also want to get into, you know, give us some little top marijuana stocks. I have a couple myself that we kind of research, and let me get your feedback on those. And then I want to pick your brain as to what the future of marijuana trading could look like. Is that cool?
That sounds good.
All right, cool. So let's kind of talk. How did the history of marijuana stocks? This hasn't been trading for years. This is something that's kind of new, right?
Well, it is. It's an emerging industry by definition, meaning the lack of institutional resources, and institutions want to see industries that are mature. Large scale institutions and pension funds, endowments, you know, these type of allocators are not looking to make a 20 time return on their investment. It would be nice. They want to not lose their money either. And so these bigger investors tend to wait for things to be a little bit further along, reduce the risk, also reduce the ability for some of the upside, to make sure that they're able to get 4, 5, 6, 7% type returns. And that's just good enough for them. Our industry is getting close to that, but properly defined as emerging, because that type of resource is not available to us at large scale yet, although we're starting to see it trickle in. And so 2013 is something you have noted here. And typically what you see is markets that are not major markets step in first to allow for companies to, you know, obtain the resources they need to scale. And in this case, Canada was really the leading group that got involved and allowed for companies to have access to institutional light capital, and really dominated the market for a number of years. Australia was also involved in a couple of others. And over the recent years, we've seen New York and London really play another role.
Now, I know you mentioned kind of Canada because it's federally, if I'm using the right term, it's federally legal over there in Canada. But until it's federally legal here in the U.S., we technically won't see that type of action. Is that a good assumption?
It's a good assumption. You know, you really have to look at the industry in two major categories. One that involves businesses that are direct cannabis marijuana operating companies.
Okay.
And in that manner, you do have to have a license to do things like grow, sell, manufacture, distribute product. And those licenses today are only available by states. Okay. And so that would be one category. The other category would be marijuana-related businesses, is what the big banks and institutions call them. These are companies that service the industry, that service the license holders at these states level levels to provide them services they need, things like media and packaging and bottling and technology and all kinds of other services that these license holders need. And we call those ancillary businesses, marijuana related businesses. And it's important to define that because that is how the big banks and institutions define the category. If you are not, if you don't need a license to conduct the activity, then effectively you're in a little bit different risk profile. And we're starting to see these larger institutional type investors put capital into cannabis stocks that don't have a license. But in terms of the ones that do acquire a license,
right,
there is a little bit more risk there. And so we have not really seen a major shift into that category as of yet.
Okay. Okay. We have a quick question. Again, if the question is kind of on topic, I would kind of bring the question up as we go, Matt. If it's not on topic, we can take it towards the end. But I think this is on topic here, is how do I obtain a stock as an investigator within legitimate company in Canada? How do I obtain stock as an investigator with a legitimate company in Canada?
Well, there are plenty of good opportunities in Canada. It's a good market. It is a environment where you don't see a lot of venture capital. In Canada, you tend to see these penny stocks, which resemble a little bit the pink sheets or over-the-counter stocks in the U.S. And the reason for that is in the 70s, the U.S. government instituted the venture capital exempt structure, which is what really incentivized investors to be able to invest in early stage companies, take on an additional level of risk with which you can build early companies into mid to late stage companies. And if you look back at that point in time, that was really the shift from a industrial age or a commodity age into the innovation age and the tech age. And out of the 70s, you started to see through the 80s and 90s, the computer businesses and the technology and the internet businesses. These were all built off the back of sort of this venture capital approach whereby investors could invest in early stage companies and, you know, and help their expense with which to do so. Right. And that gave us Facebook and Apple and Google and Microsoft and all these companies. Were extremely benefited by this type of structure. In Canada, for example, you don't have this as much. And so companies build themselves, and then as soon as they get to be, you know, a small to medium-sized company, they'll list on the exchange, and that's where they get their growth capital. Versus in the U.S., when you get your seed capital and your friends and family capital, the next step for you would be venture capital or angel capital. And this is, you know, the A round, the B round type capital. And so, you know, in Canada, you have to be aware of the fact that that also brings a different level of public market trader. And public markets simply represent a test of psychology is what they really are. And when you're in a market like Canada, and you have a bunch of smaller day traders that are trading early stage companies, you don't have these long-term hold large institutional investors that sit on cap tables. You tend to have a lot of movement.
Okay.
And so the public markets up there can represent venture capital. They do have the TSX Venture and then the CSE, which are in large part a little bit smaller and earlier companies. The TSX exchange, the regular one, is for larger companies. And so you need to pay attention to that. But, you know, when you're in these Canadian markets, they have a great purpose, but you need to understand there's a difference between buying Berkshire Hathaway and, you know, a cannabis company that started 2 years ago on the Canadian exchange. They don't have the largest institutions in the world on the cap table thinking about years and years and years of a hold and a return. Tends to be people that are maybe thinking about short-term positions and trading in and around certain structure
with some wild projections. Understood. Okay, cool. I want to kind of now thank you. I hope that gave you a good answer there. I did not have your name. It just said Facebook user, but thank you for asking that question. Appreciate that. Now, Matt, I kind of want to go through some kind of some hot stocks that are notable that people are talking about and kind of get your feedback on those. One is Tilray. This has been one of the most talked about marijuana stocks, and I believe they are a Canadian pharmaceutical and cannabis company. Any thoughts on Tilray?
Well, yeah, in particular, today's news or maybe yesterday's news, they acquired MedMen.
Wow.
Which is, you know, one of the most well-known brands in the cannabis world. MedMen did take on a significant amount of debt to build their business. They had a few mishaps along the way, obviously, but the good news is that, in fact, my partner was talking about this morning, they did spend a lot of money on their brand, and brand means something.
Right.
And that brand is, you know, if you're Joe Schmo on the street, that's a brand you recognize. And so in our estimation, Tilray's done a very nice job for themselves by acquiring that business because it does have brand value. They got a discount on it, and I think they just assumed the debt. And I think this is a really good move for Tilray. And so I would expect that, you know, that to have some benefit. Additionally, if you look at Tilray, you know, years ago, this was a company that had some amount of revenue. I don't know what it was, but the value in terms of a multiple on that value, call it in 2017 or 18, was very high for the type of business it is.
Okay.
Tilray has actually been a great company. If you look at their revenue numbers every year, I believe they've grown their revenue by maybe double. They've increased their assets. They've added, you know, lots of employees. So by all measures, they've actually, like most cannabis companies, performed when you look at the underlying business. But when you look at the way companies were traded in 2016, 17, 18, they had value multiples that were outrageous, even with 25 to 40% compound annual growth numbers on an annual basis. If you're marked at 100 times multiple for a business that should be a 5-time multiple, even with 30% growth, you still have to have a revaluation on that business. And so, you know, Tilray's a good example of one that in 18 and 19 had to go through evaluation exercise so that its revenue was in line with the true value of the business. And that was all cannabis public companies for that matter. But in 18 and 19, those things happened across the board. And so the companies that survived and got themselves to a good position likely also increased revenue and assets and IP and all kinds of things. And so I think this is a really good time to be thinking about the right cannabis stocks. There's certainly some wrong ones out there. Right. We don't all know what that is going to be. But this is a good time to look at Tilray, particularly because of this MedMen acquisition recently and the type of businesses they run.
Most noted. That's a very good in-depth overview. Now, another Canadian company that's been up and coming or been talked about a lot as well is Organigram. Are you familiar with Organigram as well?
A little bit, not as familiar.
Okay. So, I mean, from my understanding, they are more into edibles and infusions. So if you're looking at a company as compared to a company that's involved with, say, flower and someone that's trying to more niche with edibles or ingestibles or even beverages, do you see any advantage in those in like a long-term play?
Well, we certainly do. Through many of our companies at Arcadian, we were able to track data in this industry. And you know, this is the most important person in the industry. Again, my partner, Christian Verrier, said this morning. It was genius. The most important part of the entire equation in this industry is Joe Schmo. Joe Schmo is you. It's the cannabis consumer. And today, that is all that matters, and that person decides the fate of this industry. It's a commodity-to-consumer space. And so as we sit here today and our companies track the consumer desires and needs and demands as time goes forward, we're certainly seeing product category differentiation. Now, we don't necessarily see categories lose growth on a yearly basis.
Right.
But we certainly see some that grow quicker than others. There was a time where the vape category had a quarter or two that didn't do as well. Right. But if you look at the pie chart of cannabis products, every year that goes by, verticals continue to grow in different ways. If you look at cannabis flower, it's estimated that roughly 6% of the world's adult population already has a relationship with the flower. In some countries, it's 12 or 14, and some it's 2, but on average. And they say that that's been the case for hundreds of years, if not tens of thousands of years. I mean, this is not a product that was born yesterday. I mean, this has been around for pretty much all of history. And so that's to say that cannabis flower is growing as a category, but relative to other categories, this is about taking a plant that can produce molecules for which can be infused in anything in the grocery store. Any consumer product known to man has an endless amount of opportunities for these molecules to be infused. And so it's about educating the consumer and providing them product that's new categories.
Yeah.
It isn't just this, you know, 10,000-year-old flower. And edibles is certainly one of those. And I would say beverages maybe you know, in the past 6 to 9 months, probably the most interesting category of the new categories to emerge.
I agree, especially with ease with consumption and also convenience. Big things. Now, another company you could say has been up and coming is, they say sometimes a sleeper is Sundial Growers. Now, this company represents a licensed cannabis producer based in Canada, and they operate Top Leaf Cannabis, Grasslands Cannabis, and they're a direct to consumer brand found in most Canadian dispensaries. Do you have any insight on Sundial?
Well, not as much, and you know, part of the reason I can divulge a lot of this information is because we're a private investor. We invest in private companies.
Okay.
We don't invest in public companies, although a bunch of our companies do go public. And I'd like to bring up one called Agrify, which we happen to be on the board of. And it's actually, I think, the most well-performing cannabis stock of the year. Certainly on the non-plant touching side, it is. But we only invest in private companies. And I can talk about these things because we don't do public deals. We're not registered to do public deals. We're not a banker or broker. So I'm just giving you information as a private investor that I think can be helpful. But, you know, it's not our firm's position to do public transactions or be able to, you know, give particular insight there of significance.
Cool, cool. Now, with the difference between a private and a public, could you kind of give us a quick overview as to what makes it from private to eventually go public?
Well, yeah, a private company is... you know, not available on a public exchange, but you know, at its just kind of highest form. But a private company can elect to go public as an exit option or as a way to, you know, have a liquid currency to do certain things, make acquisitions, fund the growth of the business if it's not just an exit. And you know, so but we focus on private investments here, and they probably to the tune of maybe 15% of our companies, maybe even 10, have elected to go that direction. In theory, though, you would wait till peak valuation. And until that happens, you may not want to unless you have a very particular reason. So we've actually encouraged our companies to stay private because, as mentioned earlier, these large institutional investors and buyers have not come into this industry yet.
Right.
And in theory, if you were able to be the best at whatever you do, that would be the point in time that you would likely get the highest value for your business.
Okay. Okay. So that's a good game plan. So is that kind of what when you say a lot of your private companies, of course, are looking forward to federal legalization, that would kind of change their investment strategy?
Yeah, federal legalization, in theory, it would be the peak inflection point for certain companies. One could argue that if you're a grower or seller or manufacturer of cannabis, that day may have happened in terms of multiple for what you've done as a business. Mm-hmm. You know, case in point, if you go back and look at Tilray in 2017, the multiple that it had based on the revenue at the time, you probably will never see that again. It was probably over 100 times a multiple for a business that at its core is agriculture, manufacturing, brick and mortar retail products. I mean, these types of businesses don't trade at, you know, 25 time multiples like some tech media company. These are businesses that outside of cannabis trade at a 1, 2, 3 multiple.
Okay.
And so in some respects, maybe that has happened. That doesn't mean Philip Morris and Procter & Gamble have bought yet. Obviously, they have not. And so there will be large institutional Fortune 500 companies that enter on that side of the business, and they'll be spending a lot of money. But they're not going to pay multiples that are too outrageous. On the servicing side, the ancillary side of the business, those types of companies have not achieved peak value at all. And for example, Salesforce hasn't bought CRM or Oracle, or you haven't seen the large packaging companies buy packaging businesses, or, you know, news businesses or media companies haven't bought news and media. And so in that respect, I think you still have probably around federal legalization, maybe a little bit before that, to where you'll see that happen for those types of businesses. In terms of the B2C companies, the consumer product businesses, federal legalization is really the start of that opportunity. You could build now, But until you have regulations and you have a clear path forward in terms of how you can build certain products and be selling to consumers from an FDA standpoint, and then followed by consumer awareness and adoption. On the consumer side, we anticipate federal legalization to really be a catalyst for several years after that for consumer categories to have an opportunity to be built.
And what would you say an example of B2C is, like the dispensaries? Is that?
No, we would consider, yeah, it is. I mean, in some respects, but that really is a fundamental aspect of the industry. We really look at that as, look at the gold industry, for example. If there's gold, there needs to be the picks and axes and the boots and the jeans to sell to the gold miners with which to obtain the gold. Right. You know, and so in markets that become available for this industry, there are sensitivities around how to allow the gold to even be something you can get. How do you grow it? How do you manufacture it? And then ultimately, how do you get it to where it can be sold to a consumer? Okay. These are all things that are fundamental for any part of the industry to exist. You can't build a consumer product in the form of an edible without having those licenses in place. It just doesn't exist. You also can't build a tech company, you know, to service growers and sellers and manufacturers without those things being in place. So the whole industry really gets built off the fact that the fundamental aspect is in line from a supply chain standpoint, and then you can build efficiencies and products to go along with it.
Someone could buy my podcast. No, that's what's up. I like it. Cool. I want to get back to getting some more insights of a couple different companies. Welcome to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast Show. I see some of you guys still joining. This is live interactive. Any questions you have for Matt, whether it's about private investing or public investing as well. He's got some great insight on stocks. Canopy Growth. I hear that a lot in the news. They had a recent kind of decline a little bit based in Canada. And then Experts Site. Any insights, any familiarities from there, Matt, with these two companies?
Well, you know, Canopy was the big player early on. Our good friend Bruce Linton, you know, was the head of that business for a long time. He's departed now, and they were the big player early on. And yeah. You know, as we stand today, they're still one of the biggest, but these U.S. companies have exceeded a lot of the expectations, because this is really the market in the U.S. where you see, you know, probably over 90% of the entire world's revenue today is in the U.S. The U.S. probably will do $25 billion in revenue this year, and Canada, you know, probably is $2.5 to $3 billion. And wow. So... right. And so you really you need to look at the U.S. market right now for companies that are able to actually get revenue. These international markets are going to be phenomenal. Mexico in particular.
Yes.
Is really exciting. Europe is going to be good. It's just moving slow. Africa, some good things are happening there and in other markets. But as of today and for the foreseeable future, you're really looking at the Americas to be the forefront of where you can get real revenue.
Nice. Talking about U.S. based, Trulieve, I believe I said that right, is a U.S. brand headquartered in Florida and has nearly 95 dispensaries in the state alone. And it's most likely to be recognized by anyone who purchases weed legally in the states of California, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, or West Virginia. They don't just sell seed, but they also cultivate and produce products in-house. So it sounds like some of these U.S.-based companies also who are vertically integrated have a advantage as to those who are just, say, producers or just manufacturers or just retail stores. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, it does. And again, same answer, because this is where you're able to actually have revenue growth. If you look at Trulieve and Curaleaf and GTI and these types of, you know, top five U.S. MSOs, every single quarter they've been able to grow their revenue something like 20% every quarter. Wow. And that's what investors want to see. And there's a roadmap ahead where they're going to be able to continue to do that.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, for your private sector, like I know you mentioned Curaleaf already and some of these U.S. companies, is there any, we got Cresco Labs, that's another one that's been recognized as well. Any insight about Cresco Labs?
Well, Curaleaf is a great one. We're very close with that group, and we just think the world of that team. And so we would like to point them out. We've done a lot of business with them over the years, and just think that that's one to pay attention to. But you know, the top five, really the top 10 public stocks on the multi-state operator side are all worth a look. Okay. In fact, you may want to buy an ETF. I think there's a couple of out there that give you some exposure to all of them, or maybe you just want to, you know, take some money and buy a little bit of all of them. You probably end up doing really well if you do that. Again, friend, I'm glad to be here with you, but it seems like this is, particularly focused on public stocks, which is not something that we do. And, just want to reiterate the fact that we're not in a position to comment much on these, but I'll give you our opinion as a private investor. There's nothing illegal about that.
No, that's what's up. No, it's you're an investment scene, and you've definitely are involved in this. So yeah, any kind of insight with this as well. And it's actually you're one of the top guys I wanted to actually ask about this. Now, could you actually kind of explain a little bit more? I'm going to kind of bring up your information right now with your investment group, Arcadian Capital. If you're a private company and you're looking to pitch to you, how does one go about doing that?
Well, our team would love to hear from you guys. That's what we're here to do. Our email is investments@arcadianfund.com, and our team does a wonderful job of making sure everything gets looked at and spends time providing some response, whether we are able to move forward with it or not. We have mandates with our funds, and they make sure to go through everything that comes in and see what qualifies for our funds, or maybe just be a friend and provide some perspective to help the business.
Would there be any recommendation for someone who's for the first time looking to kind of pitch their business to your firm?
Well, it just depends on what kind of business they are in terms of stage. If it's your first round of capital, we're not going to be the place for you. We would advise that you find a friends and family round and maybe some angel investors that like to come in early and build a business. But what's really important is that you recognize and appreciate wherever you are as a business. It's not about the destination in life. It's about the journey. And you just need to be who you are, where you are. That's what God wants from us anyways. And that's just okay. And so if you're a company that's raising your first capital ever, make sure you speak to who you are, and it's okay to have big dreams. You should ask for big things. That's good. But you have to be realistic about where you are and make sure you spend your time wisely. If you're trying to pitch a late stage equity group or a public investor or a pension fund and you're raising your first capital, odds are you're probably not going to spend your time very wisely. You should make sure you spend it in a group of investor class that focuses on where you are. If you're in your mid-stage equity or late-stage equity or pre-IPO or looking for debt or credit, my advice is just to make sure you know where you are and spend your time raising money with folks that align with the stage you're at.
Okay. Okay. Any mistakes that you would say, what's one of the biggest mistakes, whether it's investing in the private sector or even if you're looking to invest in the public sector, any big mistakes that we can't avoid, maybe top two?
Well, I think you have to be realistic about, again, where you are in the valuation with the type of business that you have. And sometimes people get a little bit too aggressive and overvalue their business based on where it is. And even if you get that financing done, you could look back and have a difficulty with your next round because investors want to see up rounds. They want to see growth. So don't try to outgrow yourself. Just be right where you are. That's the biggest mistake I see, is not just being fair with where you are and making sure that every time you do a financing that you're growing, because investors look back and you don't want to have a down round. That's a big red flag. Very difficult to get a favorable financing if your last round was a higher valuation than the one you're raising now. So that's important. And then I think the second one is, the structure from a compliance standpoint and from a team standpoint. Oftentimes, we see a good business opportunity, and maybe the story makes sense for financing. But some of the things that the business has structured from a team standpoint could be detrimental, and the community that you build is the most important. So don't be in a rush just to add pieces if it doesn't seem to align with the energy of the firm.
Awesome. And that's kind of use seeking capital now from this is some key takeaways for those looking to invest in stocks. And I know you have seem like you have good knowledge in investing even on the public side. Any key takeaways for those looking to invest? Some do's and don'ts. There seems like there's plenty of publicly traded stocks that's in Canada, that's in U.S., that's whether it's touching plant, not touching plant. Any key takeaways as to how we could make wise decisions in investing in marijuana stocks and not, like you said, there's some multiples that are way over what they should be. Is there anything that you can recommend as to how we can know if someone is in a good ballpark and it is a smart investment in that marijuana stock?
Yeah, you just should run your own comps, comparables. So if you're investing in a company that does manufacturing, well, you ought to be able to look at the key metrics for that business, revenue, assets, growth, just the main numbers, and then compare that with businesses that are not in cannabis. That do manufacturing. Maybe they manufacture, wood products or coffee beans or whatever it is. And make sure that they're in line, because as this thing gets more institutional, the bigger investors that come in have a certain way of looking at businesses, and they need to be pretty close to how they see these types of businesses outside the cannabis space. And so just make sure you run your comps really close to what they're seeing at in other industries, I think would be really, really important to do.
Awesome. This has been great, man. I appreciate it. Any big news going on over there with Arcadian Capital?
Always, friend.
Nothing you're going to share, huh? Are you going to keep us in suspense? You're going to give us one big thing?
Well, the best thing to do is go on our website and sign up for our newsletter. We send out, the most relevant news from the industry on a weekly basis and all sorts of events and happenings. That I would encourage you to go sign up for the newsletter, and all of those will come to you on a weekly or a monthly basis.
Awesome. Again, I want to thank you again, Matt, for your time. This has been a great show. I know a lot of listeners making comments, gave some wise information. Again, thank you very much for coming out. Any last things you want to talk about, or after that, we're pretty much good, brother.
Yeah. I mean, hedge yourself. This is an emerging industry. There's not one company in an emerging industry that's worth your only investment. I mean, you should really have a diversified approach, and typically in emerging industries, if you're a portfolio manager, they say 20% of your companies end up being 80% of your return. And so make sure you're diversified here. There's a lot of upside, but with that comes risk and a potential to have some downside. So don't put all your eggs in one basket. Be nice and diversified. And lastly, this industry is about community. It's about doing things right. It's about putting female founders first and women in the forefront. It's about minority lives that have been persecuted through this plant for many, many, many years. This is about the environment. This is about animal welfare. This industry stands for all the ESG things that we had hoped and dreamed industry would stand for. And if you're going to be in this space, I hope you come in with that mentality, because we're changing the world and making it a better place one by one. And if you're going to do anything at Arcadian, that will for sure be the case. But I think those of us in this industry are very mindful of the fact that we serve a greater purpose than just returning capital.
Right.
And I hope you do the same.
Couldn't say better myself, my brother. On that note, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Every Wednesday, we do a new show on a Campus Therapy podcast. Definitely catch us live twice a month. And we also do replays as well. Check out CannabisTherapyNetwork.org, CannabisTherapyNetwork.org, where you can go to our free hub. It's a free membership, members area, where you can replay all our videos and also search through all the content and get all our slideshows as well, all the resources, just the audio versions. And also you can get free journals as well if you're trying to journal cannabis on your own. So check out CannabisTherapyNetwork.org. CannabisTherapyNetwork.org. And again, Matt, I want to say thank you. And to everybody listening, keep life rolling. Thank you. All right, brother.
Okay. Thanks, man. Good seeing you again.
You too, brother.
Okay. Peace. God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you. Thanks for listening to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. For more cannabis therapy blogs and resources, check our website, CannabisTherapyNetwork.org. CannabisTherapyNetwork.org.